group meeting Friday, 8th February 1985. An anniversary is a very significant date. Few people realize that all the universe acts in order to produce each single item which composes it. I mean, it's almost impossible to visualize or to be aware of that fact. To me, it is a fact that the whole universe is continuously in action. And whatever expression comes out, whatever is pressed out of it, is the product of the entire universe at play. Now it rests with us human beings who have, like the animals, consciousness, reason, and a few other things like that. Animals have a psyche too, you see. But we are very much more advanced than the animals. And it is possible for us humans to realize that state of consciousness, that awareness which enables us to see that any particular manifestation whatsoever, be it only a single atom, is the product of the whole universe in action. Now there is a serious implication to this. It means that human beings, as far as their consciousness is concerned, are evolving towards a culmination of consciousness. Consciousness itself is evolving. It's not only the psychophysical organism which has evolved starting about 40 million years ago. It's not only that, but consciousness itself is evolving, and its culmination is in terms of holistic consciousness. Holistic means whole, complete. That's what it means. And therefore, it becomes all-inclusive. Whatsoever exists in this universe, be it the tiniest possible thing, an atom, or a subatomic particle, or a virus, or whatever it is, you see, has the potentiality of consciousness in it. I think I've mentioned this before too, that the primordial creative energy holds within itself the potentiality of everything that has emerged out of it and that will continue to emerge as long as there is manifestation, which means as long as there is time, space, and matter. Now I'm using matter in a rather a wide sense, not merely solid physical gaseous matter, but everything that is manifested, you see. And all of it has this potentiality inherent in it, this potentiality of consciousness. It is almost impossible to imagine, for instance, to take something fairly big, not an atom, but take something fairly big, like a stone. It's almost impossible to imagine that a stone has consciousness, the possibilities of consciousness inherent in it. But that is what, that is how I see the universal situation. Every quality that we are able to discover all throughout the universe is there in potentiality right from the beginning. It's the brain cannot possibly visualize it. One may be, sometimes one may be inclined to believe it when one reads of it or one speaks of it. But don't believe it. Just leave it as a statement in the mental box that we have, you see. And it may be that as we proceed with living the truly human, the religious life, our consciousness will gradually evolve towards that holistic condition which makes us aware in a totally inclusive sense. And then we will see that yes, the entire universe is conscious in some degree or other. Now there is a very important consequence to this. If we become aware in that manner, then we can see one of the main purposes of the existence of the human species. We have talked about mind and its development and its fulfillment and so forth. But people have not realized that consciousness in itself underlies mind, matter, everything. And since this evolution goes on, that is one of the great purposes of our individual existence, to bring that about. It's one of the, if you like to use theistic language, it is one of the purposes of the divine. Now, this total being and consciousness, the primordial energy which becomes all this, becomes the total being, doesn't it? Now, being consciousness is there right from the start, and it comes to fruition first in the human kingdom. The animal doesn't wake up to these things. It knows nothing about infinity or eternity. It cannot contemplate its own nature. It cannot ask questions as to origin, as to the source, as to the aim of the whole process and so forth. It just lives. It becomes conscious in its own way and up to the extent possible for itself as a species. But in the human species, this thing can touch transcendence itself. Those who have realized this holistic consciousness are the people around whose person a new religion comes into being. And one of the great purposes of the religious life is to promote the evolution of this consciousness. So now, this evolution needs an apparatus. Every manifested thing, however dense, however subtle, is an apparatus through which this primordial creative energy enables consciousness to come to its fruition. People often wonder, well, what is the purpose of our existence? Well, that seems to me the fundamental purpose. And in that purpose, there are involved several other purposes, which are secondary, if you like, minor purposes. But they all come into play. As far as I'm aware, this sort of thing has not been stated anywhere so far in the human race. But if we are truly concerned with the real fulfillment of mankind, including ourselves individually as such, then it is our business to awake to this. Now, the primordial creative energy produces the various bits of apparatus, so to say. We are well aware of the human kingdom, and the individuals of the human kingdom are part of that apparatus. We know about the animal kingdom, the plant kingdom, the mineral kingdom, the earth, the solidest matter that there is. But that doesn't exhaust all that is throughout the universe. We don't know all these other things. Many systems of thought have produced ideas about it. But one has to be extremely careful in connection with these ideas. What we do know, what we do experience, is the human, animal, plant, and solid material kingdoms as such. That we do know. Those who have talked a great deal about other worlds and this, that, and the other, may have suggested something which corresponds to the reality. But be extremely careful of all those suggestions, because such suggestions have emerged out of the imaginative activity of human beings. And remember, the imaginative activity is the image-producing activity. It's fantasy. Now, I would say that fantasy is part of reality, undoubtedly. For me, reality is anything and everything that we experience. For me, a shadow is real, because it is there. When anything obstructs the light, it casts a shadow, doesn't it? Well, for the time being, that shadow is real. It is there. It is not non-existent. It is existent. So for me, everything is part of reality, including all the fantasies and the products of the imagination. But certain realities are ephemeral realities. A shadow in itself is unconscious. It has no purpose or deliberate action on its own part. So to that extent, it is unreal, if you like. But there could come the time when light is so omnipresent that there is no such thing as a shadow. That is a possibility. But I mean, again, now there we are imagining things. We leave that alone. We have to deal with the practical. And as I said, an anniversary marks a fruition point of the evolutionary process of anything and everything in the world. Now, in connection, I'm going to talk about something quite different for the moment. Professor King of California has written the foreword for the third book on Zarathustra. And there he has mentioned how he has used early Indian religious thought as well as the heart of religion for his students. And he has used the heart of religion in the United States only, but prior to that he has taught in Africa, India, and the States also, using early Indian religious thought. But he talks in that foreword of the heart of religion as being a godsend for his students who were doing graduate work. And there is at least one whom I know who has got his BA on studying this. And Professor King is keen that all the work which has been done here in these books and in our group meetings and so forth should be recorded and studied carefully. Unfortunately, the doctoral students, that is those who are working for a doctorate of their PhDs, that particular section now has closed down because there isn't sufficient interest available. But he would very much like to see all this sort of brought together and preserved carefully. Now, considering his opinion, I thought it gave me an idea. I thought it might be useful if we studied together this book. Does the idea appeal to you? Very good. We did some years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, we did take a section or two of this book and studied it, you see. And of course, a great deal comes out in the study, which of course is not written down. It is implied there, but it is the significances and implications of what is here which are of great importance to us as a particular special group which is concerned with the living of the religious life. So, let us start today at the beginning. You know, you all have a copy, don't you? Oh, all the old members have a copy. The newcomers perhaps haven't, but I have about 60 copies available for sale. So, those who want to buy them, buy one can have one. Or buy one to present to some friend who is serious and earnest about these matters and so forth. Now, let us start. The first chapter is entitled the theme of the whole book. Whenever the creative activity of the spirit effectively meets the urgency of the human situation, there is a true renewal for all who are quickened by it. Now, there is a great deal implied in that single sentence. First, that there is this creative activity of the Spirit. We may go right to the origin itself and see that the primordial creative energy does not function like a human being does. He does some work, or he produces something, and then he stops. He has produced it, he has finished with it. But the primordial creative energy, whose context is infinity and eternity, is perpetually in action. Now, don't interpret the word perpetually merely in terms of time. You see, I've been trying, particularly the last 5 or 6 years, but very specially from last autumn, to try and help those who come here to be free of the limitations upon their perceptive processes. The primordial creative energy functioning in eternity does not function in terms of succession, which implies time and space. The whole thing is there at once. It is utterly, well, it is extremely difficult, I'll say, for the brain to try and picture this. Don't attempt to picture it. You can, the only English word that I can use is you can sense it consciously. As and when you sense something consciously, it has become part, you have become part and parcel of that, and that has become part and parcel of you. And then the consequences of that consciousness manifest themselves in our thought and feeling, our speech and our action. See, these are the things we know with respect to our life: thought, feeling, speech, action. You see? So those four will express in some way or other that of which we are truly conscious. If, for example, a person is truly conscious of wisdom, not as a collection of ideas and thoughts and so forth, but wisdom in itself, then his whole life, all his thought and feeling, his speech and his action will naturally and spontaneously express wisdom. Now, it is not all a one-way traffic. As you and I, as human beings, with the aspiration to realize truth and make it increasingly manifest, as that works in us, if we live in such a manner that our thought and feeling, our speech and action can be called wise, then that affects our consciousness. What our consciousness is manifested through our thought, feeling, speech and action. But we have the power deliberately to try and make our thought, feeling, speech and action more and more wise. And that effort on our part affects the consciousness itself. Consciousness is unknown to us. It is as the old people taught, that part of transcendence itself which has touched our whole psychophysical being. That is consciousness in its transcendent reality. Otherwise we don't know what consciousness is. You see, all the philosophers and theologians and so forth of the past have never appreciated just precisely what that consciousness means. What consciousness means. It's only the perfected holy ones who, by becoming the perfected holy ones, became conscious in transcendental terms. Their consciousness was at home in the sphere of the infinite and the eternal as vividly and naturally as they were conscious in terms of the finite and temporal, which is the ordinary consciousness we here as psychophysical organisms possess. You see? Now, it happens in history that when there is great turmoil and trouble and disturbance, the activity of consciousness, of the spirit, of consciousness in its transcendent sphere, meets the human situation. That is to say, put it in other terms, totality affects the individual who shows that he has some sort of light beginning to glow within his own being. You see? Get it? And you know, they used to express it in terms like this. If you take one step towards the divine takes innumerable steps towards you. You go an inch, but the divine jumps a league towards you in consequence of your traveling an inch towards the divine. But the inch that we travel shows that there is an awakening taking place in us. And that way, one does begin to live the human life in the full sense of the word human. Most people, literally thousands of millions of people, and there are 5,000 million today on the globe, thousands of millions of people will say, "Oh my word, that is all utterly impossible. I am an ordinary fellow." And then they just put it aside. They won't consider it at all. Because inferiority complex, if you like, they are aware that they are not capable of responding to such things or making the effort. But they don't know that although we haven't got wings, if they want to fly, they can fly. You see what I mean? I'm talking metaphorically. I haven't got wings, I can't fly, you see. But if you really care for the truth, the reality, the ultimate bliss, which is our birthright, you see, if you really care for it, then that caring will produce an intense energy from within oneself, which tries to make the move. Let us put it in childish terms, childlike terms. You get a little infant. Now you watch your own children, those of you who have had children or are going to have children. You watch the infant. After a while, the infant is making efforts. It is wanting to get to something and so on. it tries to get hold of some toy which it has, or to touch mother or father or whoever it may be, and to eat and so forth, and grab food. Grabbing food is a very prominent trait in little children, you see. Now, that wanting from within like that is the energy which is making that child awake to grow towards what it is striving for. You see? Of course, it does it all without being intellectually aware of everything. We are trying to give it an intellectual form so that we have some sort of direction as to what is happening and how we can help the good thing to happen. So now this creative activity of the spirit is the response to your activity and my activity in our small way to grow towards the fulfillment of the human race as such. And we are just individuals who grow towards that fulfillment. The great spiritual teachers of the world were people who had realized this. They were not merely half a dozen or a score or 100. There were literally thousands of them, because remember, we started a very long time ago, and we have no record of the people who realized this fruition prior to Adam. I'm just using Adam as a convenient starting point, you see. You'll notice in Genesis that Adam was on speaking terms with God. Now, that's a very interesting. How many people have ever considered what that signifies? What is the meaning of that? What does it mean? Again, we have the statement, I'm using the Bible because all of you here are better acquainted with that perhaps than with, say, Hindu texts and so forth. We have the statement, and Enoch walked with God. And Enoch was not, for God took him. Now, how many people have ever thought of that? Even to think of it is helpful, leave alone to see, to get a real ray of light as regards its inner significance. Enoch walked with God. But God is the totality, the absolute all. Enoch himself, or John Brown, or whoever it was, or is God manifest materially. So to walk with God, or to walk in God, as several mystics have put it, you walk with, or you walk in, or you walk to God, you see, means that the transcendent, the divine, was getting closer and closer to Enoch. And because Enoch reached fulfillment, true fulfillment, the final stage, Enoch was not as a separate, isolated, self-conscious human being, but he was in communion, total communion with divinity itself. So, Enoch was not, that is to say, Enoch as a separate person with a name and an address and all the rest of it. He and God were an identity. That's the meaning of, and God took him. In the New Testament, we have this term, and the manhood was taken up into the Godhead. You see? Now, all that is implied in this first sentence. Let's go on. The sentence, I'll read it again. Whenever the creative activity of the spirit effectively meets the urgency of the human situation, there is a true renewal for all who are quickened by it. You know the phrase, the quick and the dead, who are quickened by it. You see, to have a less intense contrast, quick and the dead. Consider the fetus. There comes the point when the fetus is quickened, and the mother for the first time knows that this is there, you see. So, when the creative activity of the spirit meets the human is quickened. So these humans become new men and usher in a new age. All the great spiritual teachers, not only those around whose personalities religions got founded, but several spiritual teachers who, we know the names of many, hundreds actually, they became the new men. That means that they are limited, isolative, separative consciousness had dissolved. It had become holistic consciousness and was a transcendent consciousness, capable of functioning in the infinite and eternal, as much at home there as in the everyday, finite and temporal, which is the isolated and the separated. You see? So that is the real human fulfillment. Beings like Zarathustra, Moses, Jesus, Enoch, and several others, you see, the Buddha. I'm not too sure about Muhammad. I have reservations there. But all these, the really great spiritual teachers, you see, Milarepa, if you like, and people of that caliber, you see, they were the new men, and they usher in a new age. That doesn't mean that the new age embraces the whole of humanity, the whole world, simply because in all the previous centuries and millennia, these people have been confined to their own milieu, several in India, several in China, and then in Palestine, Arabia. Well, I would rather include some of the great Sufi mystics who really had realized the perfect thing, you see. And yes, I've mentioned all the important ones, you see. They were the first fruits of humanity, the first fruits. And what they were represents the goal towards which we are, the human race is moving. Such were Lao Tzu, Krishna, the Buddha, Zarathustra, Moses, Jesus, and many others of whom history has but a dim record. I have actually included Muhammad here, but studying the Quran a little more carefully makes me question. He wrote certain things in the Quran which are not characteristic of the perfected Holy One. I'll put it in gentle words. Each of them made the needed response to his own unique situation and communicated religious truth in a form which was outstandingly marked by its originality. There are few who realize how very original was the form in which these teachers presented the truth, the reality. That originality was characteristic of the times, the circumstances prevailing then, the people whom they amongst whom they lived and taught, the culture of that age, and the advance in the knowledge of the nature of things. This last is of the utmost importance. The knowledge of the nature of things determines the form in which the great spiritual teachers could talk. See, there are so many drawbacks in the recorded scriptures of the world. I have pointed out several during this last year. And people can see that because of the circumstances and conditions and because of the nature of the limitation of the knowledge of the nature of things in those days, it was not possible to say anything other than what they did say. What I am saying may have one or two things which are in advance on the past, but we are moving very, very fast, and the progress is getting along at a much greater rate than in past centuries. There will come somebody else who will be able to put things in a form which will make what I have said obsolete. You see, I'm fully aware of that. But for the present, this has some significance for our particular period of time. Now, so their teaching was outstandingly marked by its originality. It has overflowed the limits of their own culture, their own country, and so forth. So we have half a dozen religions which have spread all over the world. You see? Well, I think we'll have to stop there today. That's just the first paragraph. We'll continue from there next time.